McBride is the author of the classic memoir, The Color of Water, and the acclaimed novels Miracle at St. Anna and Song Yet Sung. A graduate of Oberlin College, James went on to receive a master's degree in journalism from New York's Columbia University. He worked as a staff writer for the Boston Globe, People magazine, and the Washington Post. His work has appeared in Essence, Rolling Stone, and the New York Times. His April 2007 National Geographic story entitled Hip Hop Planet is considered a respected treatise on African American music and culture. A talented musician, James has written songs for Anita Baker, Grover Washington Jr., among others, and is the recipient of major awards for his work as a composer in musical theater. He's collaborated on films with director Spike Lee, including Miracle at St. Anna and Red Hook Summer. McBride holds several honorary doctorates and is currently a distinguished writer in residence at New York University. Today, we'll chat with James about his title, The Good Lord Bird, winner of the 2013 National Book Award. Welcome, James. I'm thrilled to have you with us on The Book Report.
We're delighted to be here.
What is the significance of the title, The Good Lord Bird?
Well, The Good Lord Bird was an ivory-billed woodpecker that existed during the 1800s. That's said to be extinct now, but it was so big that when people saw it, they'd say, "Good Lord." But he stitched into this novel as a kind of symbol of God's power. And that's how the book got its title, and that's where I got it from.
All right. Why did you choose to write a novel about John Brown now?
I don't know. I think books choose you, you know? I stumbled onto his story one day. I was in Maryland researching another book, and I saw a reference to him. And so I just simply drove down to Harper's Ferry, where he had his great attack against, you know, John Brown was a white guy who was against slavery, and he decided to, you know, attack slavery by attacking America's biggest arsenal, which was at Harper's Ferry, in what was then Virginia, and what is now West Virginia. Mm-hmm. So I went to visit there, and I was just fascinated with the story. Here you have this guy who, along with 19 others, who decides, it's like, it would be like me climbing into a tank and attacking the Pentagon because I'm at odds with some American policy, you know.
Yeah.
It was just a suicide mission.
Right.
But I was fascinated with him because he was very religious and he was very, you know, he didn't smoke, he didn't drink, he was a family guy, he was a farmer, you know.
Right.
So I just became fascinated, and it was all about figuring out how to tell the story then.
You know, it was really interesting because in the book, the reader never really gets a feeling if you think he was a zealot or crazy.
I admire him for his convictions. But, you know, I couldn't have done what he did. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy to look back in history and say, you know, well, if I was a slave, I would have beat up every white person, or if I was a slave and I was white, I would have freed my slaves. I mean, you know, that's all. That doesn't mean anything. And so, you know, you look at people who were there and did what you wish you would have done, and in examining them, you kind of see how that world was, and it makes you respect them more, and look at what you would have done and see that you probably wouldn't have done much. I mean, we're all victim of the society that we grow up in. You know, we're all part of that, you know, cultural milieu wherever we come, you know, however we come in. And that's generally how we go out.
You know, one thing that amazed me about The Good Lord Bird is the cadence of your writing. From the early pages on, the dialogue moves in a rhythm that, for me, captured the time brilliantly. Were there any qualities of your music that you bring to your writing?
Well, I mean, there's an improvisatory quality to writing that relates to music in some ways. I mean, in music, you have to have the technical skill in order to be able to improvise and to stay in the right key and to move when the harmonies move and to play the proper elements that fall within the framework of the chord or the chord progressions that you're working in. But then, and essentially, you end up creating a new melody and a new song within the framework of that old song. And in that regard, the good Lord Byrd has a lot of improvisation in it, because the John Brown story has been told many ways by many people, and many of them are very good writers, and I needed to figure out a way to tell it that was different.
How did you research the speech pattern of your Civil War era characters? It was so spot on.
Well, first of all, I grew up in a house where people talk like that. I mean, I grew up in New York, but all my relatives grew up in the South. And all my neighbors and all my friends' parents, you know, they all grew up from the South. With New York, when in the 60s, in black New York, it was all people from the South, you know, from Texas and South Carolina and North Carolina and Florida. And, you know, everybody's mother seemed to be that, like they were from Alabama. So that was part of it. And then I just, you know, researched first-person narratives of slaves and whites from the era and, you know, railroad books and all kinds of stuff. People, it's there, you know, once it's there, once you kind of get it in your head and you put it in the character's mouth and they start to kind of talk it, you fall into it, you know. It just kind of gets in your bloodstream. It takes a while, though. It took me a long time. The language of the book probably took me the longest to get straight than anything else. Hmm. Only because I wanted it to flow properly and to be easy to read and funny at the same time. And, you know, so I rewrote a lot. I rewrote a lot with the Good Lord Byrd.
We're speaking with James McBride on The Book Report. Can you introduce us to Henry Shackelford?
Well, Henry Shackelford is a 10-year-old kid who's working in the tavern in Kansas Territory in 1856 when John Brown walks in. And John Brown walks in and he gets into a fight with the tavern owner. Everyone pulls their sidearms and a gunfight ensues. And in the chaos, John Brown snatches Henry out, thinks he's taking a 10-year-old girl to freedom because he thinks Henry's a girl. And Henry, thinking that this crazy white guy is just nuts, just plays along. And so he has to pretend to be a girl throughout the entire narrative.
What's your reaction to several reviewers who liken Henry to Huck Finn?
Well, I mean, whatever they're sipping, I hope they keep sipping it. I think it's a wonderful comparison, but, you know, comparing one of my characters to Mark Twain is like comparing, you know, Dave Koz, the saxophone player, to John Coltrane, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, Dave Koz is a pretty good saxophone player, but John Coltrane he's a noun, you know. He's like house, car, Coltrane, you know, bed. And Dave Koz is a very good saxophone player. And I might be a pretty good writer, but I'm not in the same category as someone like, you know, Mark Twain or Toni Morrison or William Faulkner. I like it, but, you know, I'm not going to say take it back. You know, it makes you buy the book, good, but, you know, it's not Mark Twain.
You know, in the book you write about John Brown's meeting with Frederick Douglass. Did this actually occur?
Yes, that meeting occurred, and it occurred pretty much as it's pretty close to the way it's portrayed in the book. John Brown and Frederick Douglass were very good friends. Frederick Douglass knew John Brown was going to attack Harper's Ferry, and they met in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, not far from Harper's Ferry, and John Brown begged Frederick Douglass to join him at Harper's Ferry, thinking that if Douglass joined, many more blacks would come. And Douglass basically said, I can't do it because it's a suicide mission. And he didn't do it. And it was a suicide mission. But John Brown was very disappointed about that. And he never, to my knowledge, never spoke Douglass's name ever again.
And did Brown actually meet with Harriet Tubman as well?
Yes, he did. He surely did. And Harriet Tubman was supposed to come to Harper's Ferry. And I think the only reason why she couldn't come was because they got the dates wrong. That's the problem with John Brown. He never got anything quite right. You know, he was always about 75% on the dot, and the other 25% was like somewhere else. But they had to attack Harper's Ferry a week early because they were found out by local authorities.
I see.
And so that was one reason why Harriet Tubman wasn't there. But she promised him she'd come. And And he had a lot of respect for Harriet Tubman. He called her General Tubman. I've been working on a TV show for FX that's based on Harriet Tubman. You know, if it comes to fruition, then I suspect that people would be a little more tuned in to who she was.
Well, James, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, delighted. Thank you for having me.
All righty.